Welcome to Food Talk. I'm Teresa.
And I'm Pat. We are with North Coast Food Web, working to build healthy communities in our region through food and agriculture.
And joining us today is Jeff Gunn. He's the chef at the Bridgewater Bistro here in Astoria. Welcome, Jeff.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Jeff, great to have you with us today. Before we jump in and start talking about food, share with our listeners how you wound up here on the North Coast.
Well, it was a long journey. Started out in the food industry about 20 some years ago.
Okay, people, he doesn't look old enough to have done that.
So you started as a child.
Yes, I started as, I was
I
like
there
two.
Were laws,
you know?
Against that.
No, I started out in Hawaii working at a restaurant there on Waikiki
Sweet.
Beach and just kind of fell in love with food and service as a whole. And I worked in a few different restaurants there in Hawaii, moved back to California, worked in a few restaurants there, and decided that I had learned from enough chefs that it was time for me to learn the basics mm-hmm. and figure out how to do things my own way. Mm-hmm. And so I decided I was going to go to school and went to Le Cordon Bleu in Portland. And always loved the coast. I lived on the coast, obviously, in Hawaii and then also in California.
It's hard to get away from the ocean.
It is. I'm an Aquarius, so I got to be near water.
Oh, yeah.
And so decided that it was time for me to move to the coast and bought an old Victorian here in Astoria.
Sweet.
And been here ever since. I've been here, it'll be 10 years this September.
Wow. So where did you start out cooking on the coast?
It was with the Martin Hospitality Group down in Cannon Beach. At the Lumberyard, I also worked a little bit at the Wayfair and the Stephanie Inn, which is just a great company to work for.
Yeah. So yeah. Now you're at the Bridgewater Bistro.
Yes.
So, and you've been there how long?
I've been there just over a year now.
So maybe.
Oh, that's fairly new for you then.
A little bit, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
What? Yeah. What a kitchen to take over.
it was daunting at first, but very, very exciting. This is the food mm-hmm. that I love to cook and an atmosphere that mm-hmm. I feel really comfortable in. And a great staff to work with, and I have an amazing view of the river.
Yeah. So for people who maybe don't know about the Bridgewater Bistro, there may be a few.
I
know. Maybe tell people a little bit about the restaurant and you know where it is and what is that style of food?
Yeah, well, we are bistro style, mm-hmm. And we are actually on the waterfront. Kind of in between the Holiday Inn Express and the Cannery Pier Hotel.
It's a gorgeous location.
It's the other red building.
Yeah.
And we really try to just be unique, stay rustic and home style, mm-hmm. but with flair. And we try to, as you might imagine, mm-hmm. here on the coast, being that it's such an influx of visitors mm-hmm. From outside the area, you really want to give them a little bit of everything to choose mm-hmm. from. And so, yeah, we're going to have our burgers and our fish and chips that everybody's going to want when they come here. But we also, have some really unique seafood dishes. We got a couple of great steaks on the menu.
Mm-hmm.
And the one thing that I love is that every day I get to come up with a fish of the day or a seafood special of the day. And so I get to come up with whatever I want, and hopefully people like it.
So how do you connect with that local seafood? I mean, what do you find you like to cook with? I mean, do you have fishermen you buy from?
Actually, I go through Ocean Beauty, mm-hmm. and what I can do is call them up in the morning and say, what are the boats bringing in? The boats are landing that morning with fish that they've just caught, out on the ocean or in the river, and find out, what kind of piques my interest.
Mm-hmm.
And, like right now we're getting into the season where we're going to have more fresh lingcod and sea bass and things like that. And so, it's really nice when you can deal with stuff other than, your normal Petrale and Dover and all those kind of things, which are wonderful, as they are. But, I got some Pacific sea bass the other day and I was just nice. All excited about it,
What did you do with it?
It's funny, I can't remember.
Because that was a few days ago,
that was
right?
A few days ago. I can't think
about today. I have a hard time with that. So spring is upon us, and
yes.
we've got lots of great farmers in the area growing things. How are you finding that?
Some things are just coming online right now. We do have some winter Dover kale that is mm-hmm. amazing. We have some mustard greens and some hardier greens that are really nice right now. One of the greatest things is fiddlehead ferns. I just
I had
a forager come in with a bunch of fiddlehead
nice.
Ferns the other day. But the greens are coming online now.
Mm-hmm.
The snap peas. I just got a barrel of snap peas the other day.
Wow.
They were so, so delicious. Of course, you know, I had somebody else clean them because they're such a pain in the rear. But
the boss.
Yeah, exactly. I get to delegate sometimes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But no, we just, you know, I'm so excited about this kind of new movement in the farming industry here locally.
Yeah.
I think that we're all, as chefs, connecting with the farmers, coming together. I think it's going to make a really nice commitment to local, sustainable, organic farming. And so it'll be interesting to see what comes up this year and how the farmers have adjusted a little bit to, you know, we want to make it beneficial for the farmer, mm-hmm, and we want them to make money, and we need to make money. So coming together and finding that right balance is going to be interesting. But I think we're getting there.
That's great.
It's always a challenge, but it's such a great opportunity as well. How do you find, I mean, do your customers, do you find them asking more about, you know, where does food come from? You know, are they curious about that?
I believe so. You know, I'm not out in the dining room all the time.
That's true.
I don't hear all the questions, but the feedback that we've gotten from having, you know, farmers that we can call out on the menu or that my special that day, mm-hmm, you know, I can say it's coming from Moody Rose Farms or it's coming from, you know, Fred's Homegrown or something like that. And I think that really gives a little bit extra to the guests, and they're going, oh, wow, I can, you know, or I got a, you know, a spring salmon. I know what boat that they came off of. I know exactly where it's caught. Mm-hmm. You know, things like that. I think people are really starting to understand the importance of that instead of just a generic piece of fish or a generic, you know, bag of lettuce or whatever the case, mm-hmm, may be.
I think people are definitely looking for something more.
And making that connection.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And somehow food with a story, you know, somehow it means more if you know that there was a, you know, this is the name of the fisherman that caught this, or this is the farm that this came from.
Absolutely.
That
Absolutely.
Always makes me think of the Portlandia episode.
I was just
chicken.
Thinking that.
God, the chicken goes through my head every time.
I know.
What's the name of the chicken?
I know.
Okay, so moving on from Portlandia. So we do have Mother's Day coming up, and I'm always curious about, you know, I think about cooking at home and sometimes the mental anguish of what am I going to fix for dinner? And I'm thinking about a restaurant coming up with a menu. So,
because you've got to be a destination. You have to be one of those restaurants that a lot of people go to for an event like Mother's Day.
Yeah, it's a special occasion. And
we are, definitely. I notice that all the time where, you know, we have people that get engaged in our restaurant, you know.
Aww.
I mean, yeah, it's really spectacular. But we are kind of that special event place here in town, and
uh-huh,
people, you know, like to celebrate their anniversaries and Mother's Day and Easter.
Do
and
you get
like
prom
that.
Dates?
Oh. Yes.
Oh, man.
Yes,
that would be
do.
So awesome.
All the little girls in their big
that
dresses.
Would be
and,
so awesome.
Oh, yeah. It's pretty funny, you know, and the guys all decked out. And it's funny. It's funny.
It's
but.
So great. Okay, well, back
is.
To Mother's Day. I'm sorry. For some reason
so
I just.
What are you planning for Mother's Day?
Well, you know.
Chris is looking for a prom date.
I'm not. That's a little creepy.
you know, it's really a collaboration. I really try to give as much to my sous chef and the cooks in my restaurant to come up with their own ideas and, mm-hmm, to, you know, to figure something out for themselves, something that they're excited about, something that they really want to do, and give them little pieces so, mm-hmm, that they can, you know, have something, you know, like, and we even call out their name on the menu, you know.
Oh,
this
nice.
Is,
great.
You know, this
nice.
Is Kelsey's egg, you know, scramble, or this is Sarah's, you know, strata, or, you know, something like that, mm-hmm, or Corey's, you know, sandwich of the day, or whatever you want to, you know, however you want to do it. And so, you know, so I talked to them, I'm like, well, what would you like to do? So let's take the, because we always have certain items that we like to keep, mm-hmm, on there, we just change it up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was talking to, we call her Beaker. Mm-hmm. She kind of runs the egg station on Sunday brunch. And so I said, well, what would you like to do? And, you know, she was like, oh, you know, crab, mushroom. We're talking about some vegetable, maybe fiddlehead fern or something like that. And then, you know, I get these, like, weird ideas that pop into my head all the time. And usually it happens in the shower. I don't know why.
Thinking about food in the
I
shower,
guess so.
Of course. Where else would you think about it?
but I just, I had this idea, and I did a special yesterday. And I had, you know, I was like, well, you know, Dungeness crab, obviously. Wild mushrooms should be online by then. Fiddlehead ferns are, you know, mm-hmm, beautiful. And I was like, well, why don't we just take it to the next level and do like a lobster hollandaise on top of that?
Whoa.
You know, I mean, just really go to the next level. And, you know, of course, her eyes got all big and buggy. And so we're like, okay, that's what we'll do.
Nice.
You know, and there's also a lot of research that goes into it, you know, especially for some. I'm off the cuff. I'll never look at a recipe unless I absolutely have to. I just come up with stuff.
But you've been cooking for a long time.
I have.
I mean, that's a skill that develops.
We won't say how many years ago.
No, because you started as a child. But it does take some skill building to be able to do that, because you can think about ingredients and know if I combine these, it's going to taste good, as opposed to, that's going to be terrible.
I got to throw that out. We're going to McDonald's.
Well, and I think part of that, too, is the willingness to explore and to try things. Mm-hmm. I think people that are so tied to recipes, like, I can't cook unless I have a recipe.
Yeah.
There's a lot of fear in there about trying things. Mm-hmm. And I'm a huge fan of helping people let go of that fear, which is why I think learning basic techniques is a really important thing. Mm-hmm. So that if you understand those foundation things, those fundamental techniques and flavors and balance, mm-hmm. then you can be freed up from recipes, which allows you to be a bit more creative.
Yeah, absolutely. If you know just the basic, you can take it anywhere you want. Mm-hmm. You know, we do all of our own smoking in the restaurant. This is
nice.
One example. You know, all of our salmon, pork products are smoked in-house. And so we take a recipe, a brine, we try that. It was good, but, you know, tweak maybe it. A little too sweet. Mm-hmm. So we try something else. Okay, well, it's getting there. It's balancing out. And then, you know, just break it down to its common elements and start putting it together. Mm-hmm. And now we have an amazing smoked pork belly.
And I love that it wasn't like perfect the first time out. It was like, oh, okay, so taste that, tweak it a bit, try it again, and maybe again.
Sure.
Now we've got it.
Yeah. And adjusting.
That sounds really good.
Adjusting while you're making something. You know, if I'm coming up with a sauce.
Taste as you go.
I'm constantly, I get to a point where I can't even taste it anymore, so I have to have other people taste it for me.
What is it? I mean, you can't, when you say you can't taste it, it tastes the same to you, or it's just
familiar just kind of tastes. It just kind of tastes the same. And so you have to get somebody else's perspective, because sometimes it's I have a problem with my memory, to where my mind tells me what I'm tasting instead of just tasting. Instead of my tongue. So I'm remembering how it tasted the last time or the time before that or whatever the case may be. So sometimes I have to get my mind out of it and have somebody else taste it and have them give me my feedback. Or have them give me feedback. I taste it and say, yeah, you're right. And then I know I need to put a little more acid or a little more salt or a little this or a little that. And so, yeah, it's a collaborative effort for sure, especially when you're trying to come up with something that's just absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
And get those flavors that sing, you know?
I never thought about that
I
before.
Love that from a chef perspective of yet another way of thinking about beginner's mind. Mm-hmm. You know, any of us that get so used to what we're doing, you go in with this level of expectation or knowing and forget to drop down into what am I really tasting or experiencing right in this moment. I had not thought about that.
Everybody has their palate and things that they like. Well, it's great when you're cooking at home or for your family, but you're cooking for like 300 people. So you have to remember what is going to appeal to 300 different tastes, you know, different palates. Different likes and dislikes. Yeah. And so you really, you know, although I love spicy, I can't put something
too
that's really spicy. You can have a hint of it, something that just kind of, you know, it just sings a little bit in your mouth, but not something that's just going to like burn you up, you know, whereas some other people, you know, would totally enjoy that. And so you have to remember the mindset of the guest and understand that their tastes are going to be a little different than yours.
I wonder, this may be a silly question, but it's what's popping into my head. When you went to cooking school, was there a particular thing that you learned that really stood out for you?
That's a very interesting question. You know, the fundamentals is what I really had needed.
Yeah.
And one of the classes I had, actually, was how to fix a sauce.
Oh, brilliant.
And so
I mean, once it's gone south.
Well, yeah, once you've just like, oops, I dumped too much salt in it, or, you know, it's too...
Or my hollandaise curdle.
Yeah, well, then just throw it out and start over. but no, it's basically about fixing a sauce in the flavor profile.
Nice.
And so what the instructor did was he took sauces, he separated into five different pans. Mm-hmm. He oversalted one, he oversweetened another, he over-acidified one, and there was a couple of, one was too bitter, and one
the other
was too
one
sour.
Was just right.
Yeah, no, and so he showed us, like, what things you can do, add, and what have you, to get it back to where it should be. And of course, once it's gone, it's gone. I mean, yeah. there's a
certain point. Yeah,
it's like I can't even taste what the sauce started at. But
I have so done this.
but no, it really helped me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really helped me to where, you know, I mean, mistakes happen. When you're cooking, and you know, if you know how to balance something and you know how to bring it back. Not only are you going to save a lot of money, but you're also going to, you know, make sure that you're putting out the perfect sauce or whatever.
So what would be something like, I'm curious about, like, if you add too much salt to something or you make something too sweet. I mean, because salt is one that's like, it's easy to kind of go, whoa, I didn't mean to put a teaspoon in.
Right.
You know, how do you, I mean, because I always heard like, whoa, if you put too much salt in, you're kind of screwed. That's it, you know.
Well, there's an old tradition of just putting a potato in it.
Really?
Yeah,
like
it doesn't
a pot
really
of soup
work.
Because the premise is that it will absorb the saltiness.
Yeah.
Look, everyone's nodding. Marianne's even nodding. I didn't know about the
it's
potato,
old, I mean,
but
does,
you're saying it doesn't
does,
really work?
Well, it does kind of work, but it's not the best solution.
Yeah.
So start with a potato.
Yeah.
And then sweet balances salt.
Oh, okay.
Salt balances sour. There's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Acid balances sweet. There's a whole
list
of things.
You didn't know we were going to quiz you.
I know, right?
Sorry.
It's way too early in the morning. I'm a night owl.
We are talking with Jeff Gunn. He is the chef at the Bridgewater Bistro here in Astoria. And we were just giving him a little pop quiz unexpectedly about how to fix a sauce. Mostly because I've had this problem before and I'm really excited to know. So when you talk about acids and sours, like, what's an acid?
Acid could be anything from like lemon juice to vinegar.
Okay.
And, you know, sour is kind of the combination of too much sweet and too much acid.
Okay.
So you can balance that with salt.
Okay. Because for some reason I think of acid and sour being kind of the same, but I guess it's not.
Well, if you take an acid, just a straight acid, and then add sugar to it, then you get the sour.
Oh.
And I think it's interesting to think about those flavors, because if you think about how we taste, right, there's only four or five if you count umami, things that we actually taste on our tongue. And so if you think about, what am I tasting here? That's the thing I love about how chefs work, is finding that, what am I tasting, and then how can I balance this out? Does it need more sweet, or does it need more salt, or does it need a little bitter?
Well, and it's
or
interesting that you say that. You know, umami has always been on the forefront, you know, of my mind, and I was quoted this many years ago, but you know, I mean, that's what we go for. We go for umami, and actually in Asian cuisine, we have five balancers in American cuisine. In Asian cuisine, they have two more. And of course, I can't remember them right now. I think one is alcohol. One is alcohol, so that's awesome, you know.
Okay.
But yeah, there's, and I think it has something to do with soy.
I could see that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Soy is a wonderful balancer for flavor.
Or fish sauce.
Yes, fish sauce is amazing. If you make a curry and you don't add fish sauce, it's not going to taste right. I mean, I'm just saying.
Good to know.
Yeah.
Good to
it's
know.
One but, of those things,
but,
right,
and
when
fish
you want
sauce
a little
a drop.
Yeah.
A
yeah.
drop.
That is powerful stuff.
It
and
is
I think
very
a lot of
powerful.
People would open a bottle of fish sauce and go, whoa.
Okay, that's spoiled. I got to throw it out.
I don't ever want to taste that. But it's so but you're right. It's an amazing flavor. Mm-hmm. If you just put a little bit in.
Yeah, just a dab will do you.
Don't, not a heavy hand.
No.
Less is more.
Yeah.
You can always add a little bit more, but you can't take
it out. You can't take it out.
Well, see, and that's what I always
potatoes
heard about
don't
salt.
Work on that
I know. That's why it's important, the salt and taste as you go.
I know. That is true. That is really true. So those are, but, and you're having to do that in the moment in a, under a lot of pressure too. Like when a kitchen gets going and you're in the middle of a dinner rush.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, we try to plan things out so you're not actually, you know, making these sauces all a minute, you know, so you make, you know, a half. There's a lot of
was that a chef term I heard? What was that? What when you said making the sauces, what did you say?
Oh, all a minute. I'm sorry. It's like in the minute, you know, or, you know, we'll finish a sauce with butter or, mm-hmm. Or warm it up or, you know, mm-hmm. add an ingredient at the end mm-hmm. that you don't want to, you know, sit there and overcook or whatever the case may be. But, you know, most of the time if I'm doing a sauce for dinner service, like for our seafood of the day, and there'll be maybe two or three sauces or two or three different ingredients that are going to mm-hmm. go into that. I'm obviously going to make, you know, mm-hmm. enough to get me through the night and not have to do it.
Yeah. You know, from scratch every time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great thing to learn from restaurants and chefs is that whole prep. The amount of work that goes into prep, have everything ready.
No, if I work a 10-hour day, only about 3 or 4 of it is actual production for, you know, mm-hmm. just getting food out to the customer. The rest of it is prepping, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, people don't, I think, realize how much goes in. I mean, even down to a simple sauce, like mm-hmm. The horseradish sauce that goes on a prime rib. You know, it's not something that we're just going to whip up right at that minute. Right. You know, I mean, we have to make it in a batch so that mm-hmm. it holds up for us for, you know, a few days. And because there's, you know, 20 other sauces that we have to have on hand all mm-hmm. the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so we do them in batches so that they hold for a few mm-hmm. days. And you know, chowder, we don't make chowder every single day, right. you know, every 2 or 3 days. Mm-hmm. Because if I had to make every soup, every sauce and every little thing every single day, well, there's not enough hours. I mean, obviously. Right. And we'd have to have a staff of mm-hmm. like 50 people.
Right.
So, but you, I mean, it's partly you have a tremendous volume that you do. I mean, you serve a lot of people. What's a typical seating like for dinner? What do you think?
Well, the other night we did 212 people for dinner. So,
and that was just the other night.
That was
wasn't
night.
The special
that was,
event. Yeah.
No. I mean,
that's a lot of people that you're feeding.
But then, you know, you look at we have an event coming up for Memorial Day. And so we'll probably do 250, 260 people in the dining room. But then we have a banquet for 200 people on top of that. Yeah, I don't want to think about it. I'm scared.
That's a few weeks away, right? Let me get through Mother's Day first.
Yeah, exactly. But that, I mean, it fascinates me that you can do that. But then what's amazing, too, is that you can do that and yet turn out really delicious food as well. I mean, there's one thing about just like churning out mass food. Mm-hmm. But churning out mass food that is amazing and tastes good.
Yeah, sure.
And that, so when someone sits down and you get this beautiful plate presented to you and you taste all those things, and that's a huge skill.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's I have to say, like, this is, you know, a little bit easier for me because where I came from, you know, we over doubled those numbers at the lumberyard. So,
So you're used to cooking for volume.
I'm used to cooking in volume. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot more attention to detail. You know, the menu is a little bit different, obviously. Mm-hmm. But it's like, oh yeah, we're doing, you know, 500 today. Nah, no big deal.
So what's in your fridge at home? I always want to know that about chefs.
Yeah, there's a couple to-go boxes. There's a 12-pack of beer. And something that's unrecognizable.
Oh, yeah.
A little science project.
Yeah, exactly. No, I really, I think there's some hot sauce.
Yeah.
A couple batteries.
Because that fixes all kinds of things, right?
Yep. And mustard.
Do you cook at home at all?
No. I mean, I really try not to. I mean, I know that my girlfriend would love it if I cooked for her. And I will. You know, we haven't had a day off in a while. So I think, you know, we'll make a nice evening of it. And I'll cook her a little something nice. But
does she cook for you or is that a little
intimidating? No, she's scared to cook for me.
Yeah, I think
that's got to be hard as a chef.
And no, she's scared to death. She's like,
I've had friends over that are chefs and have like fretted and panicked like all day long going, what am I going to cook them? Oh, my God, I'm so scared. And
but I mean, what do you think that we cook like on our days off or what we eat on our days off?
I know. But and
this is how you know a chef walking out of a grocery store. Mm-hmm. Number one, he's wearing his coat that looks like he's walked through, you know, the mud all day. But usually he'll have like a six pack of beer and a frozen pizza in his hand. I mean, that's
so it's a step up from that.
Yeah.
Hey, it's home cooked. I know. Now that I know that, I'm feeling a little better about things. Okay.
No, I'm one of those people that I, you know, I mean, I'm fine with like Hamburger Helper, you know, I'm fine with, you know, I know. It's like a sin, right?
Yeah, but it's warm food and you're hungry and it's, yeah.
I can't help it, you know? I mean, you know, deep down
well,
inside.
That's an exhausting job that you do. And honestly, I can't point fingers because the number of times that I've been like, you know, working on the farm all day, growing this like beautiful, amazing food, and then like go inside and it's like popcorn for dinner.
Yeah,
you know, because I'm too flippin' tired to cook anything. Yep. And, you know, it's just, it is kind of crazy. Like the people who are producing the amazing food often eat the worst.
it's horrible.
So do you guys have something on the menu out there that is one of those can't take it off because it's people would just rebel if they didn't find
you know,
it on the menu?
Well, you always have to have your staples. You know, you got to have a meat dish. You got to have a fish dish, you know, fish and chips. I mean, that's one we could never, ever get rid of.
They just want fish and chips,
So that's one, but that's kind of a no-brainer. You know, it was interesting because one of the things that I really wanted to see when I first started there was more fish sales. And so I really tried to change the fish, you know, the salmon, because we always have a salmon on the menu. And, you know, we always have a seafood special of the day. Well, our number one seller when I first started there, aside from fish and chips, was the steak. And I was like, we're sitting on the river. I mean, literally on the river. Why are we selling a bunch of steaks and we're not selling our salmon or our seafood of the day? And so that's one of the things that I really attacked when I started there. And so our salmon, we do a seasonal preparation for that. Right now we're using using Starvation Alley organic cranberries and cranberry juice.
Nice.
And, you know, taking it kind of really outside the box and...
salmon and cranberries, I wouldn't think of that pairing.
And, you know, some people have been a little adverse to it. And so I'm working on that recipe a little bit.
But that actually sounds really good.
it's funny because it's springtime. Cranberries and star anise and all that kind of stuff is like fall, but it's just a really nice fresh preparation. The other one was the duck. Somebody told me I couldn't change the duck. Guess what? I changed the duck and it's delicious.
Good.
And people are really taking off.
What are you doing with
it.
The duck? I love duck.
We are doing a local cherry. I'd soak them in a bunch of port and then add some chipotle to it.
Nice.
And it's just a hint of vinegar. I'm trying to think. No.
That sounds really good. Just stop
some,
right
some
there.
Some other
That's
stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah, brandy and cherries.
And
add me there.
A chipotle cocoa dust that we put on it when we sear it.
Nice.
So it's got this kind of South American feel to it with local Northwest ingredients.
Yum.
Okay.
I'm there.
All right.
See you for dinner.
That sounds delicious.
I think Pat and I have a hot date.
One salmon and one duck coming up.
Oh, man. Okay. I'm just suddenly looking at the clock. I've gotten totally distracted. I'm like, oh, my goodness. We only have a couple of minutes left. I want to take a moment to thank you so much for coming and making us really hungry.
Yeah.
Now,
my pleasure.
And teaching me how to fix a sauce. This is great.
Educational and beneficial.
Thank you so much. So, and hours, when is the Bridgewater Bistro open?
11:30 to right now, 8:30 during the week, 9 on the weekends.
Okay.
We do change seasonally a little bit. Brunch, we open up at 10:30.
Okay. And brunch is on Sundays or
brunch
Saturdays?
Brunch is only on Sunday.
Only on Sunday. Okay. Awesome. Well,
so you're open 7 days a week then?
7 days a week. Yep.
Nice.
And this is in Astoria and location in the Red Building. I think if you just look up the Red Building in Astoria, you'll find them.
Absolutely.
And it's
just
a beautiful
look
location.
In between the Holiday Inn Express and the Cannery Pier Hotel.
Yeah.
That's
right
where
there.
We are.
Or as I always tell customers when we're sending them that way, make a right-hand turn at the Kentucky Fried Chicken.
I know, right?
Hey.
Hey, whatever works, whatever gets them there.
I know. Well, I just want to take a quick reminder to build up excitement for next month. A lot of our local farmers markets are going to be starting the third week of June. Very exciting. Produce is coming.
And Astoria starts on Monday.
Sunday. Mother's Day.
Sunday,
I know.
Mother's Day.
So there's a lot of great market season is upon us, and we are getting excited about that. So mark your calendars and get ready to go shopping.
And thanks to our engineer, Marianne, and to Luke and Katie for our theme song. And thanks for joining us today for fresh conversations about food on the North Coast.